I'm Carrie Doan, and welcome to Clearly Connected. You're listening to episode 37. I'm a life coach, business consultant, speaker, and a big-hearted entrepreneur. I live in the colorful city of Cincinnati, Ohio with my family, and through my work, I've helped hundreds of conscious people overcome stress and anxiety so that they can find their way to a connected, more confident way of life in their finances and relationships. You're enjoying this podcast ad-free because of the generous support of subscribers to Clearly Connected on Spotify. You can learn more at carriedoan.com, where we'll continue the conversation we start here for anyone who wants to move beyond what keeps them stuck. If you struggle with feelings of insecurity, or you just need a few minutes away from the constant stream of information, well, you're in the right place for finding that safe space of connection. Today's question? How can we as women find the courage to share our stories and end the violence that comes from staying silent? Listen in. Welcome back, everyone. I am really excited for today's episode because I have the pleasure of interviewing my guest, Jane Clark, about the power of story and how the act of writing and voicing our stories can transform us and our communities, which is where the magic of healing can begin. So before we dive in, I want to share a little bit about my guest, Jane Clark. She is a former journalist and a retired writing and literature professor who left the classroom to write her own memoir. She wrote a book titled Story Carrier, and it's a book about herself as she pursued a deep ancestral family story that had been hidden for years. So now she devotes her time to facilitating writing workshops, gardening, and traveling with her husband near her home in the Appalachian Forest in Pennsylvania. So Jane, I am so excited to have you on the show today. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Carrie. I'm very excited to talk to you about this. It's such an important issue for me. It's been my life's work.
Yes. I heard that from you when we first connected. And I know, like, storytelling is something that has captivated me for quite some time. And I know there's so much power and ability to connect to people through this act of storytelling. So I'm thrilled to get into this with you because I know you have a lot of insights and wisdom to share around this topic. So I'd love to start the conversation by asking if you would mind to just share a little bit about your story and how this practice of writing has changed your life.
Sure. So I was born into a very dramatic developing story. I was born into a family with an older sister who was about 4 years older than me, who was dying of leukemia. And at this time, very little was known about grief or about child psychology. So the doctors who were caring for my sister said to my mother, "Your child is going to die within a year. Get pregnant and pray that you have another daughter." And so she did. And I was born. And lo and behold, my sister lived for another 2 years after my birth. Well, unfortunately, my mother, who was very young at the time, it was just grief-stricken, of course, you can imagine. She basically, when my sister passed away, put her pictures away, put away all her belongings, and never let anybody talk about her again. I don't remember ever going to her grave or seeing any pictures or hearing anything about my sister. And what it ended up doing is I grew up with this just almost thirst or desire for stories. I needed to know the story. And as a little child, I had what you might call unformed memories that were more embodied than cognitively developed, of my sister being carried by her as an infant. Other family members have said to me, oh, your sister adored you. She carried you around the house. When people would come to visit, she'd introduce you as my baby. And I remember a very deep love with this sister, but because I wasn't allowed to talk about it, the story felt like it was very ephemeral. It was very hard to hold on to. And again, it generated or created this deep, deep need for stories in my life.
Wow. I can understand that actually as you're talking, because would you say that there was something about the fact that you were disallowed from even having an awareness or understanding the story of your sister that compelled you toward that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the last thing you want to tell a child is don't do something.
Right.
So I just was determined my whole life to go after the story. I needed to know the story of my sister Jeannie. And I was convinced that there might be other stories behind it. I thought my family must be all carrying stories that I don't know. Mm-hmm. And it led me into careers where I pursued stories my entire life. Now, as a little girl, I have to say, that desire for stories was so powerful that I would make up stories just to hear the story, just to hear what happened. Because shortly after my sister passed away, my father left. So it was like losing half my family within a couple of months' time.
Yeah.
And as you can imagine, that really generates a desire for information for a little one. So I followed that desire into careers where I was a storyteller, story writer, and I'd like to think of myself now as a story carrier.
I love that phrase. It's like insinuates that we all have our own stories, right? But that we have this ability to express that, not just to carry it, but then to express it through writing or through our voice. And so I guess I'm curious to know, it sounds like you somehow got the truth behind the story. And then at a certain point you started writing it out. Is that right?
I did. It took a long time. It took me many years because, as I said, my mother, after my sister's death, my mother never went back to her that I knew of. She never went to her grave. I never went to her grave. I never knew where she was buried until probably 10 years ago. And so not knowing, plus this was in a different state. This was in the state of Texas. I now live in Pennsylvania. So I was at that time unable to get hold of the records. And it was only probably in the last 10 years before my mother's death that I was able to get more records and more information about my sister. So wow. And it just, again, made me so determined. I thought, what's going on here? What is the story? Now, I believe, based on a lot of the research I've done, I believe we're all born into stories. We tend to think of, especially those of us who are English teachers, we think we invent stories. We're born into them. We are carrying stories before we come to this planet. And for the most part, we end up having to discover what story we're carrying.
Yes. Right. And to look at your past and your lineage and to understand like what you might be inheriting from those previous stories, I think can be so powerful. So do you mind me asking, you know, at a certain point you got into the practice of writing your story out. I'm curious to know, like, what did that change in you?
Well, I only recently wrote this story about my sister and I in the book that's coming out in February. Mm-hmm. The majority of my life was spent as a journalist, carrying other people's stories, and then teaching writing at the college level. So it was only when I was able to stop telling other people's stories that I sat down and thought, I'm going to find out what happened to my sister and indeed what's going on in my family, that so many of the women are silenced and not speaking up. What are the stories? It just made me very curious. Writing the story was very interesting, Carrie, because one of the things that happens, excuse me, when we write stories is that if we really give ourselves over to the process of telling the story will take over. And I remember telling, when I was working on my dissertation for my doctorate, I remember telling my dissertation committee, the story will always tell itself. We have to learn to get out of the way. And I believe that. I believe that happens in everyone's life, that the story, whether we know what it is or not, it's going to tell itself in one form or the other. Mm. If it doesn't tell itself in your life, it will go to the next generation.
And when you're saying that, are you referencing the story of your past will reveal itself or take
over? Yes. Your past will reveal itself. Your mother's past, your grandmother's, it's believed, indigenous tribes believe that we carry these stories from 14 generations back. Mm. So they have the potential to manifest in some form or another in the lives of 14 generations forward.
Mm. Yeah, it's pretty wild to think about when you really sit with that. You said something about, you know, especially around women, the silence of our stories. I'd love to camp out there for a second and just ask you, why do you think that is? Tell me more about this sort of silent stories that women tend to carry more.
When I was doing my graduate work, I did a lot of research on other women writers who were published. And I began to see this trend that even the professional women writers struggled to speak out. They were silenced in one form or another. Some of them by their spouses, some of them by one of the writers I'm trying to think of, Zelda Fitzgerald, married mm-hmm. to F. Scott Fitzgerald, was actually the muse for F. Scott Fitzgerald's stories. So rather than her writing her own stories, he borrowed her ideas quite a bit, and of course became famous.
Wow.
This is really very, very common, very common. People mm-hmm. like Virginia Woolf. Now, she did her own writing, but her husband she struggled with depression, had child sexual abuse issues that she was trying to survive, and really had a difficult time. And her husband, I think he thought he was being kind to her, but he infantilized her, treated her as if she really wasn't capable. And I've often wondered, what would Virginia Woolf have told us had her husband Leonard not silenced her in the process? Yeah. So in the research I was doing, I decided to do a case study on women, professional women writers, and put together a study of, there were six of them, all published writers, all with advanced degrees, and all of them who are college professors. And we studied the experience of silence, what conditions caused them to have silence or lose their voices. And it was really shocking because what I discovered was that regardless of the amount of education, the sophistication, the life experience, women face messages every day that tell us to be silent about certain things. We're told to be silent about our families. We're told to be silent about how much money we make. We're told to be silent about health issues. We're told to be silent in church. We're told to be silent in the courtroom. We're told to defer to male bosses and spouses. And it ends up silencing us. It's a very subtle, pernicious thing that happens. And it ends up so seriously, so deep, that I think women's minds become colonized by it.
Mm.
Once we're silenced, we start to think of what will happen if I say this. What will happen if I tell people what's going on the job? What will happen if I share this information about my colleagues? What will happen in my marriage if I share that things are not so good? And we become, we silence ourselves, especially in a patriarchal system. Mm. And if you take a look at, for example, women in Congress, doesn't even have to be in Congress. If you just take a look at your next family gathering, the women who speak, take a look at how often men tend to speak or talk over them or cut them off. And that begins at a very young age in the classroom. And the subtle message is, be quiet, be silent. Your ideas are not important. And when it hits that stage of your ideas are not important, our minds are colonized. We're starting to think about what we shouldn't say rather than what we should be saying.
Oh my gosh. I'm getting goosebumps listening to you because I have firsthand experienced so much of what you've just stated around those questions of, can I say this about my family or about money? Feeling that, you know, your perspective is not welcome here in the church or in the courtroom. And it's so validating just to hear you say that out loud. And so I agree. I think at least in our minds, I love talking about this because I work with mindset with a lot of people, women in particular, in examining the stories that are playing out in our, even our subconscious minds. Because I, like you're saying, it started somewhere a long time ago and it's still playing out. And does it support you in your well-being? And so you're pointing to something much bigger than just, you know, ideas and thoughts that we have. It's a collective thing that is playing out in this patriarchal society. I feel it. I work with women all the time who are working against this. So, so I what I hear you saying is that this, there's a lot of power in taking that courageous step to voice your story, to speak out. And I, Jane, the question that's coming up for me is how to help women feel the courage to speak out, right? Because there are, I don't know, would you say they're real threats or perceived threats that are waiting?
Well, if it's perceived, it's real.
Yeah, you're right.
I think, the rules are so deeply ingrained across the culture that nobody really has to threaten anyone. We know what we're allowed to say. Even if, for example, small girls in the classroom, if you'll notice how often the teacher calls on the boys in the classroom, or the teacher might say to the young girl, well, that's a good answer, but let's go to Joey. And we'll give heap praise on Joey for his answer. And it's not the boy's fault. It's that the teacher is just not aware of the fact that when she speaks up and encourages one gender over another, she's participating in silencing the young girl. But even when you go to work and you're sitting in a meeting and the boss is asking for ideas, pay attention to how often you're holding back, biting your tongue, or refusing to offer something because you feel like the boss may think it's silly.
Mm-hmm.
Or the boss may, you may say something, the boss says, that's great. And then the guy sitting next to you repeats it, and the boss says, that's fabulous. We're going with that idea that he just came up with. This happens all of the time, all of the time. When I did my dissertation, when I first proposed it to my committee, I said to them, I want to study personal stories that women are carrying, because I suspect that they're all being silenced in their personal lives. And the chair of my dissertation committee looked at me and said, oh, I come to work to get away from personal stories. I don't want to hear those stories. And I said to him, well, you actually just proved my point. You just proved my point. But even if you go into, now I consider myself a deeply spiritual person, but if you go into church, and this is very, very subtle, I can't tell you how many times I've been sitting in church and I have the most wonderful ministers. What I hear about is the experiences of Job. How difficult Job's life was, how difficult and how much work Peter did, and Paul, and Matthew, and Mark, and they are the gospel writers.
Mm-hmm.
How many women have books in the Bible? Very few.
Yeah.
Even in, you would think, in a Christian church, there would be a book about the mother of Jesus, but there's not.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know where that book is? It's in the Quran.
Now,
that tells me a lot about women being silenced in the church.
Right.
I recently went on a pilgrimage about a year ago to southern France to a sacred site where Mary Magdalene spent her last few years. Mary Magdalene is the one who witnessed the resurrection, and yet she was demonized, written out of the Bible, and silenced. And being demonized is a form of being silenced. It's a violent form, but it's being silenced.
Wow. Yeah, it is everywhere. I mean, even as you're talking, I'm thinking about specific moments. You know, I grew up in the Catholic Church as well. I felt very much like my voice wasn't allowed to have a place. But even these more subtle moments of just in conversation with people being interrupted by men or talked over or ideas that are dismissed. I don't know what the statistics are, but I would imagine most women can relate to these examples of what you're sharing. And so I'm curious to know, like you and I in our previous conversation talked about, you know, this act of writing, and it being like perceived or thought of almost in a selfish way. So can you tell me a little bit about that and how we can overcome the barriers to being able to share and express our own stories?
Sure. And it is very difficult. I don't want to say it's simple or it's easy. You know, I have a PhD in composition, and I have had to learn to set aside a room for myself where nobody's actually invited in unless I issue an invitation, where I write, where there's no interruptions. I don't have a phone up here. It's very private. But even with that, many women are dealing with things like, is the laundry done? Mm-hmm. Did I take the chicken out of the freezer? Do I have to pick up Susie from preschool? And they go through this list. We go through this list of all of these other obligations we have before we allow ourselves the privacy and the silence we need to write. It's very, very common. That becomes a form of self-censoring. And we don't realize we're doing it. The other thing that I think is crucially important is that women need to support each other. Yeah. We need to understand the pressures we're facing. I run small, very small, intimate writing groups. And I run into women every day who actually come to the group because it forces them to write. They then say, okay, I see so-and-so is writing. Maybe it's not so selfish of me to take time away from folding the towels to do my own writing. And the important thing for women who are doing this as well is community. Women need a supportive community where they can write, where they will not be analyzed, advised, given advice, questioned, interrupted. In fact, in my writing groups, that's one of the cardinal rules, is that after somebody shares something, no one's allowed to speak for a full minute. And that's to help the writer, the woman, actually realize that what she's done within the context of a safe community is a form of self-creation, self-identity, creating herself as a writer and as a woman with agency.
Yes.
And that kind of experience is very, very powerful. And what I end up seeing is that when that community develops, and I really recommend being very careful about choosing who you work with in this, the woman begins to experience herself and her own voice in ways that she's never done before. It's very, very powerful.
Wow, you just answered the question I was going to ask, which is, you know, what can we expect to be the outcome of this process? And you stated that so beautifully. I can resonate with so much of what you're saying, because over the past 2 years, I've taken it upon myself to write a book, which is now in a beta read phase. And what you were describing about the internal battle and sort of competition with the demands of life. You know, as a single mom, I have more things like thinking about laundry and cooking dinner. And, you know, then I have business things to tend to. And the act of writing in the midst of all of those demands was such a discipline. It took me, I committed myself every morning. I said, okay, even if it's 10 minutes, I have to do this first. And I know I dealt with those thoughts and feelings of selfishness, or kind of like, how can I put this first, right? But eventually I just got into the rhythm of it. And it was such a deep act of what you described as agency, caring for myself, giving that sense of self to me in a way that I didn't even know I was doing at the time. I just felt called to do it. And, you know, who knows where the book itself will go, but the process of choosing yourself as a woman in that way is so powerful, especially when you, you know, gently table some of those demands for everybody else and put the focus on you and what you have to say for a minute. I mean, it changed my life. I know that as a fact. So you have this ability to really validate what I suspect so many women are going through.
And it also, if I could just add, it changes the world. When words are like spells. Language has the power to change the energy. So if you put your story out there, you're giving your daughters and other young men a role model and teaching them to do the same thing.
I love that. I have thought for years, you know, the power of words. And I've had some people say things to me like, oh, words are just cheap. They don't really mean that much. And maybe they're, I don't know, you could say that in a certain way. But I think there's so much power in the words that we choose, in the act of self-expression. I think I just read something this morning that said, you know, you can't unhear a word, or like it goes somewhere, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I just like that idea of seeing the value in not just our stories, but then what we have to say as a kind of weaving this tapestry together with our words. So I love that, Jane. And I guess I want to maybe kind of ask one or two more questions to tie this up, because I'm asking myself, okay, what if somebody's listening, say a woman's listening right now, and she has things she wants to say, but she's really struggling to voice her story or to prioritize time to even know what her story is. What would you say to her as like a first step, or as an encouragement to lean into that process?
Well, one of the things I really want to stress is that when we're carrying these stories, whether we write them or not, and often what ends up happening is that if it's a traumatic story in particular, we tend to shame ourselves for carrying it. Mm-hmm. And that's very, very painful, very difficult for a woman. So what we will end up doing is going to the doctor and either letting the doctor diagnose something, or we'll go to a therapist and we'll be pathologized. Now, I think therapy is good, especially with writing, but I think that it's dangerous for a woman and may end up silencing her more if she's not able to give herself that permission to sit down and say, what I'm carrying is very important. And for myself and my future generations, I need to bring it into being through language.
Mm. Wow. Yes, I love that you're pointing to that the trauma we carry creates this story of shame. I think shame is just rampant in our society, and guilt as well. And it holds us back in so many ways. Right, like kind of drawing out those words from within, it is its own therapeutic process. So, and it's courageous. It's very courageous.
Very, very.
Yeah. So if somebody is thinking, okay, what do I do? Would you encourage them to kind of find a writing group, to just take 5 minutes a day to really sit with themselves? What would be like a practical kind of first step you would recommend to somebody?
Well, I would say it depends on the person, and it depends on, be very careful and selective about the writing group you work with. Be very careful. I would only work with people who just think you're wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody needs to be criticized for anything.
Yes.
Because again, most of the stories we carry are about trauma or rejection, and they generate shame in us, and we want to get rid of that. So one of the prompts I use with almost every writing group, and I would recommend this for anybody who's sitting down saying, I don't know how to start, is I give a prompt like this. Write me a story you're dying to tell. Everybody has one.
Yeah.
And there's an urgency and immediacy to it. And it almost becomes like a form of just release for the person.
Yeah. You're right. Because if you think about it, I mean, I'll think about this from a psychological standpoint. If there's trauma and shame attached to a story, it stays in there. It's like manifests, and I think all kinds of negative ways. Maybe it's depression or anxiety. But when we are allowed to express ourselves And it's a form of release, right? And that is such a therapeutic process to finally kind of extract the thing that has been held within for so long. So you're not only releasing it, but then I think there's a potential to rewrite it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I'm glad you used the word extract, because I won't say that writing about this is painless, but it's like removing the poison from a snake bite.
Yes, that's a great image. And two, I want to just kind of echo what you said about being very careful about who you share this with. A couple of years ago, I had written a short ebook, very personal one, and I shared it with a few people. And there was one person who gave me, I guess I call it critical feedback, and it caused me to tuck that story away for 2 more years. Wow. And I couldn't get it back out. And I just thought, wow, I wish I had been a little more selective, because in that stage, what I needed was not criticism. I needed encouragement to continue to express. So I think that is so, so important to be thoughtful and mindful about who you're inviting into that story.
It's very intimate. It's a very intimate experience.
Yes. Yes.
With yourself and with another group of people.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Gosh, I have loved this conversation today, Jane. You've really shed light on so many aspects to the deeper places of where, not just where our stories come from, but, you know, what's actually happening, especially in the world of women, and how important it is for us to take those courageous steps and draw them out. So I guess I want to tie up this conversation by asking you a couple questions I ask all my guests, which are, number one, what are you up to these days that has you excited?
Oh, goodness. Well, writing always has me excited. I'm actually, my first book is coming out in February. And that's a memoir where I really pursue my own family stories that are quite mysterious and exciting and interesting. And I'm also working on a second book, which will be a workbook for women. And it's called Unsilencing, a Workbook for Story Carriers. And this will actually literally lead writers through prompts to write about different areas of their lives, such as on the job, in their personal lives, in their marriages, with their children, with their in-laws or extended families, conditions under which they felt they've been silenced or censored or talked over or dismissed. Mm-hmm. And a couple of the areas I get into are including women who work with therapists who feel like they're not heard. Women who, when they go to the doctor, feel like their conditions are minimized or they're infantilized or they're dismissed. Women in addiction, how addiction can be a form of silence. So it'll be a pretty thick workbook, a real working workbook for women.
I love that. Absolutely. I think that's fantastic, because these are the spaces that you don't think about. I mean, I had a therapist years ago that I didn't feel like I had the space and the voice, but I couldn't put my finger on it and I couldn't really see what was going on. So the fact that you're now offering a resource to help women in these more nuanced situations to know how to assert themselves or express themselves is so, so important. So I'm so thrilled that you're going to have, is that going to be available as well too? Or
Hopefully about 4 months. My first book comes out in February, and hopefully about 4 months after that, the workbook will come out.
Wonderful. Well, that leads into my next question, which is, how can people get in touch with you, or where can they, will they be able to find your book or these resources?
Okay, so my book, Story Carrier, A Collection of Tales of the Disappeared, will be on Amazon after February 29th. And they can also reach out to me at my website, which is www.storycarrier.com. I'm also on Facebook, Jane Clark, or my Facebook business page, which is Story Carrier. So I'm really visible. I'm quite reachable. Mm-hmm. I'm also on Instagram, Jane Clark. Jane Clark author is what I'm calling Instagram.
Yes. Well, I love that. I'm going to take all the things that you just shared and I'm going to link them in the show notes so that people can easily access all those different places and get connected to you and the work that you're doing. Because, yeah, I want to get the word out. I want people to read your book and get this workbook so that they can have that permission and the support through the story that you're telling to take those brave steps in sharing their own stories. So I just, Jane, it's been a real honor to have you in this conversation today to just glean from your wisdom. And I know I feel inspired to continue writing and voicing my own story to continue that healing process. So thank you so much. Yeah, thank you for sharing. I'm so grateful that you came here today.
Thank you.
Yeah. So everyone, I just invite you to go find Jane, check her out on her Instagram, Facebook, her website. And I just thank you for taking the time to tune into this episode today. So until we meet again on the next one, I just invite you to think about the possibility of writing and sharing your own story so that you too can experience all of the healing magic of that expression. Thank you for joining me and listening to Clearly Connected. And now, my one question for you. Are you ready to experience the transformative money magic on the other side of powerful questions and one-to-one coaching to help you break up with your relationship with money stress so you can feel a sense of security and create a lasting legacy? If so, let's talk. Book a free coaching consultation with the link in the podcast show notes to talk about what it would look like to work together and how I can help you save, invest, and make more money doing what you love. And if you enjoy this podcast, I'd be ever so grateful if you shared a review. As a thank you for your feedback, I'll be picking one listener who leaves a review every month to win a one-to-one free coaching session.